Davis van Optorp here with Felix Tomsut. A big match day in the Bundesliga, as it always is when Bayern Munich and Dortmund play. Borussia Dortmund now 4 points clear atop the table and 7 points clear of Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich, in fact, down to fifth place. And we'll talk about the other teams ahead of them at the moment in Gladbach, Leipzig, and Frankfurt in the second part of the show. But as it is with the Clásico, we're going to start in Dortmund. All right, Felix. Borussia Dortmund beat Bayern Munich 3-2. An incredible, incredible game.
Oh, absolutely. It was, as our colleague and friend John said, it was in many ways the game the league needed. It was such a brilliant game of football. It went to both sides. Bayern, to be fair to them, did very well. It was probably one of their best games of the season. Yeah. They definitely went up to the occasion. But at the end of the day, what a brilliant team is Dortmund nowadays. It's just incredible.
But the game itself was, I think some people coming into this game were just really, were really just hoping for a good game, even no matter which way it went. I mean, I think a lot of neutral Bundesliga neutrals were hoping that Borussia Dortmund finally beat Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich, up to that point, had beaten Dortmund four times in a row in the league, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of Bundesliga neutrals were kind of pulling for Dortmund in that way. But still, I mean, the game, even if Bayern Munich had won that game, they did not disappoint. Goal line clearances, penalties, just end-to-end stuff, and it was really, really exciting. But there was one moment in the game that I think really turned the tide, and that was the penalty. There was another, some would say, controversial no-call, which was Axel Witsel's handball, I think, which Bayern fans are... By the Bayern board, I should say, in the stadium, we're appealing for. But I think that the biggest incident that happened in that game was the penalty, which where Manuel Neuer goes in on Marco Reus, and Manuel Graefe pointed to the spot. VAR, it wasn't really entirely clear whether it was consulted or not, but you didn't see Manuel Graefe go over to the screen, over to the sideline. But Felix, do you think that was a penalty?
I do, actually. You can see, funnily enough, you can see how experienced a goalkeeper Manuel Neuer is. You can see he automatically pulls his hands away from the situation, as experienced goalkeepers do. But at the end of the day, there was a touch. His body touched Reus. And Markus Merk was asked in the Sky Studio afterwards, what does he think? And he said that Bayern's appeals are understandable, but at the end of the day, it's as a clear penalty as they get.
Yeah, Manuel Neuer said afterwards that he did go for the ball. He did pull his hands away, and Reus was actually made contact with his chest. It wasn't... He said it wasn't like he was initiating the contact in a way. But still, I mean, at that point, you still have to... I mean, when you go for the ball like that, it's really, really risky, and you have to make the save in a way in order for that not to be a penalty. I mean, you see that a lot of times when goalkeepers go in trying to make that save, and then they don't. There are times where the penalty is not called, but... I mean, I feel like 80% of the time that penalty, or maybe even more, 90% of the time that penalty is called.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can totally understand why, because at the end of the day, the touch is there. The refereeing will, by definition, almost always, I think according to the rules as well, will always go with the attack. And yeah, these cases are bound to be much more risky. You would expect a goalkeeper... in Neuer's stature, with Neuer's experience, to know that and understand that. And I think he did know and did understand that before he made that, let's call it, collision with Reus. But the bottom line is, I mean, I can see why are the complaints there. Because as Neuer said himself, it wasn't like a classic penalty in a way of, you know, grabbing Reus or anything like that. But the bottom line was that the touch... between the two players was there. Reus was the attacking player, and the bottom line is that that was a penalty by definition. There is no way of escaping that.
Yeah, I think there was... I mean, it's really hard to gauge these things on social media because a lot of the people that were following those games were either rooting for Bayern or rooting for Dortmund.
Exactly, that's exactly the issue.
But it's... I mean, I think that there was a vast majority of people still thought that that wasn't a penalty on social media. What I also was thought was interesting about that incident in particular, before we move on, was that Manuel Grefe didn't give a yellow card. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you see that when that penalty is given, that it's in the box, so it's in a way some people by default associate that with denying a goal scoring opportunity because it's in the box. I thought it was actually really clever that Manuel Grefe did not give the yellow card. He knew that Neuer was just trying to make the save and tried to make an attempt to get out of the way and wasn't trying to necessarily deny Royce a goal scoring opportunity. I thought that was a very interesting call, but I think it was the right call.
Absolutely. I think you mentioned the clear goal scoring opportunity. I think there's lots of talk around that double punishment part and stuff. The bottom line was that Grefe made the right call, and that wasn't the only instance. To be fair to him, it was one of probably the best refereeing performances I've seen this season. His decisions were spot on. Namely that big decision at the end with Lewandowski's disallowed goal. That he was offside by, what, 3 centimeters, 4 centimeters, like really, really short. But at the end of the day, it was offside and he called it off. So the really great refereeing performance. Also, when it comes to having the confidence of not necessarily using VAR, just doing your job, being confident about what you do. Let's hope we'll see more of that for the remainder of the Bundesliga season. Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, we didn't see the notorious VAR rectangle used by Manuel Grefe, but I mean, I'm sure that they're in contact constantly. So we don't know exactly if there was communication with the video assistant referee or not. But
put it this way, if VAR was used in any way during this game and we haven't noticed it, it just goes to show how well it's been used in this case.
Right.
Because that's how it should be. The bottom line is that I heard a referee back home in Israel once say, a referee knows he did his job very well when he wasn't noticed during the game. And that was exactly the situation. The referee did his job, wasn't noticed, got the calls right, used VAR, didn't use VAR, didn't really matter because the bottom line is that the game was flowing and the referee didn't interfere with the course of the game. It was absolutely brilliant.
And that penalty was a turning point, but it's not like Borussia Dortmund didn't have opportunities before that. I mean, you saw Marco Reus before in the first half, arguably had the biggest chance, the first big chance of the game when he was played through and he was one-on-one with Manuel Neuer. And he, well, not really one-on-one, but he was breaking forward and his shot was just flat and Manuel Neuer saved it. I mean, Dortmund played really, like you said, they played really well in this game. And it's not really surprising anymore, but you still hadn't seen it against Bayern Munich. You'd see it against Atletico Madrid for sure, which was a very impressive performance, but you still hadn't seen it against Bayern Munich, a team that they had played, at least twice a year. So the fact that they played so well also was, and they were able to come back from behind again against a Bavarian team, obviously did it against Augsburg earlier in the season, but that was also really impressive to me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was in a way a comparison between two football philosophies and two characteristics of two really, really good football teams. You could see how Dortmund, even when they were 1-0 and 2-1 behind, they weren't fazed by the situation. They knew what to do. Their game plan was pretty clear. Funnily enough, I found their game plan to be pretty similar to what Niko Kovac used to do when he used to play with Frankfurt against a superior opposition, breaking really quickly and like getting to the goal and getting to a goal scoring position as quickly as possible. And it worked superbly. It was just a really, really good game of football. And whereas you can see Dortmund coming back from behind twice and scoring the winner, Bayern losing from a leading position for the first time since the year 2000, I read somewhere. It's just a clash between two footballing philosophies and also two teams with two very different characters. And it's going to be interesting to see if Dortmund keep it up, because if they will, the sky's the limit.
What's really interesting about Dortmund at the moment is that even in this game, you see Paco Alcácer coming off the bench and scoring that game-winning goal. They have had 18 goals from the bench this season in all competitions in 17 games. That's more than a goal a game coming off the bench. That's almost something that their fans can bank on, that someone's going to come off the bench and make a difference for them. Now, maybe it's still a small sample size, but that's pretty impressive. And you can kind of, and you have to give credit to the way that, I mean, Borussia Dortmund has lost a lot of players in recent seasons, but Paco Alcácer was clearly the right type of signing for that Borussia Dortmund need to make. Even if it came at the end of the transfer window, they still got a player that kind of fit their player profile. And also got to give credit to Lucien Favre, who's rotating these players in and out and doing what Jupp Heynckes was always known for doing, which is making these players feel, giving these players a role and making sure that the role is clear with each of their players. Christian Pulisic didn't play in this game, but he did play in midweek. I mean, he did play well against Atletico Madrid, but it didn't really matter because you had Jadon Sancho and you had Jakob Brunlarsson, who maybe is the one could argue is the weakest of the bunch, but still plays a certain role for Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, I mean, the way Lucien Favre manages his squad is absolutely brilliant. I mean, you can see players know exactly what they have to do. I mean, we've spoken about Ashraf Hakimi and the role he plays in that Dortmund setup. You've got players that look completely reinvigorating. I mean, Piszczek is a good example of that. I mean, many Dortmund fans were saying that his time was up.
He was really impressive in this game, too.
Absolutely. He was one of my players of the game. That stat you gave about goals from the bench just goes to show that Lucien Favre knows when his players peak and knows exactly when to use them. And that's a great feature to have when you're basically trying to play for the league. It's going to prove to be, I would assume it's going to be one of the key things for Dortmund to win it, that it'll continue to be that way. Alcácer, I would assume, will get into the lineup once he's fit enough. I mean, Michael Zorc said after the game that he's not yet 100% fit to play two games a week. Once he will be, he also said that the rhythm of the Bundesliga is a bit different than many of the games in Spain, and you can understand that. And I think once Alcácer will have the fitness and the physical aspect of his game to a sufficient level, he's gonna start. I don't think there's any way that's not gonna happen given his form. But still, even then, and even though he's probably the one player of real striking qualities that Dortmund has, you can see them doing well even in the case of him not being able to play, as we've seen before he went on yesterday.
Yeah, so let's move on to Bayern Munich, because it's not like, it's like you said at the beginning of the segment, it's not like they played bad or played badly. In midweek, I think it was basically the same team as in midweek. I think there was one or two changes, although we'll get to in a minute. They're arguably should have been one more, but we'll talk about that in a second. But their best chances still came when Joshua Kimmich was crossing in from the right. Now, of course, maybe that's something that Dortmund and their still rather young defense needs to get better at, is preventing those balls in from coming in from the right. But you still saw somewhat of a faster pace from them. But it seems it ultimately really didn't matter. And it's weird to say also that in a game where Robert Lewandowski scores two goals, that they don't end up, and they lead, like you said, and gives them the lead, that they don't win that game. And that's shows the change in how, and basically that sums up kind of what Bayern Munich's team is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, it's a matter of if you compare between the two characteristic elements of those two teams, of Dortmund and Bayern, you can see which one of the teams is currently confident and which team knows what it's able to do. I think Bayern played arguably their best game of the season. They did really, really well. They sort of grasped this concept of dominant football, of having the ball, of moving it around in a way that would complement players like Kimmich coming from the wing back position. And it was really nice to see. It seemed like Kovac sort of understood the philosophy that, that fits his team. And it showed. I mean, at the end of the day, it was a brilliant game, not because of, not only because of Borussia Dortmund's great ability in comebacks, it was also because Bayern Munich were certainly a contributing side to this game. Given that decision about, given of that decision to include Hummels that we're going to discuss.
No, that's good. We'll just discuss it now, because that's, I think that was the one, I mean, he comes out after the game saying he was dealing with an illness. Bayern Munich has been a bit short of players, but in center they have a international quality center back on the bench in Niklas Süle. There was really no reason to play Hummels in this game. And he of course forced the issue because he said that he was able to play, but it was clear that when Jadon Sancho was coming at him that he had no chance. He had no chance. And I mean, it's great that you want to try to be a hero and give everything for your team, but you also have to make sure that you're not a detriment by being in the team. And I think it was, and you also look at the fact that Niko Kovac included him and didn't and maybe didn't listen to his instincts and put him out. I mean, that's also just shows you the grasp that Niko Kovac has on his on this team, which is still questionable. It's still questionable that he still is trying to find the right solutions. We're a third of the way through the season, and he's still trying to find the right solutions for this team. And he doesn't even feel confident enough in putting Mats Hummels on the bench and starting someone else in his place.
I think Niko Kovac got a lot right tactically during the game. And again, as we said, it was one of Bayern's better games. I would argue their best game of the season in terms of ability proper. But this is the one he got wrong, absolutely. I definitely think, regardless of Hummels' illness, I think Borussia Dortmund's style of attacking football would have fitted a defender like Süle, a defender that also has the pace, that also has the physicality, that basically has all the features to deal with a player like Sancho, as you mentioned. But especially given Hummels' illness, he has a cold or whatever. I think the bottom line is that he should have been out. I think he should have taken the responsibility and say, listen, I'm 50-50. He said after the game in an interview that it was sort of a 50-50 situation. I'd expect a player of Hummels' stature and of Hummels' experience that knows what Borussia Dortmund is about and knows what the football, what sort of football they play, to come to Kovac and say, listen, it's a 50-50. I'd say, leave me out. But the reality was that it was the other way around. He said, I want to play either way. And Kovac went with him. And I think that was certainly a mistake. But at the end of the day, I do think we need to give a lot of credit to Kovac. He got a lot right during this game. And Bayern's ability, it just showed. It just showed. They played a really, really good football. If they keep on going that way, Niko Kovac will get the confidence and will get to sort of understand the squad that he has better. That's I think almost a given. Should Bayern give him the chance to?
Right,
it's gotta be mentioned.
Well, let's get into what this game actually means, because I mean we're talking about obviously the result that happened, but what does it mean? I mean, Bayern Munich have never come back from having a 7-point gap above them in the table. They have never won a title that way. They obviously they're still not firing on all cylinders, even though they have had this kind of softer stretch leading up to this game. They still drew with Freiburg, and they still struggled against fourth tier opposition in the cup. So how does this result affect Bayern? Is this kind of the first nail in the coffin for them?
It depends. I mean, when it comes to Niko Kovac himself, I personally don't think so. I think he made the case for himself during this game. I do think it helped Bayern's leadership understand the problems within the squad. That many players need to be replaced, that the squad needs to be reinvigorated. And Ole Gunnar himself said this is the case. He said, I think it was in a Bild interview yesterday or today even, that he said that in the summer there's going to be big changes in Bayern's squad. And that's understandable given the situation. When you see their leading players, they still had to count on Ribery. They still had to count on the same old guard, so to speak. That also affects the dynamic in the squad. I think at the end of the day, there will be changes at Bayern Munich, but I don't think that necessarily means Kovac will have to pay the price.
Right. So before we move on to our next topic, let's just talk about some of the fan protests, because we are the Tribune of podcast. So we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss this. I mean, both sets of fans protested the Super League revelations once again. I believe both did last week, correct? I know Bayern Munich fans did. I think both sets of fans. Although one could argue that Dortmund was much more adamant about their commitment to the Bundesliga than Bayern Munich was. That's kind of expected, but it still is kind of impressive that both fans in the same game were protesting the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is no, if for people that know both fan scenes, as we call it in Germany, it was hardly a surprise, because I don't think there's a single set of match-going fans that would approve of that idea. There isn't one. Neither in Germany nor in England. You take Italy, for an example, just none. It's just a bad idea. When it comes to fan culture, when it comes to the history of the game and the future of the game. And I think both Borussia Dortmund's and Bayern Munich's fans understand that. To be fair to Bayern Munich fans, they've been protesting against the sheer idea of a Super League for quite a while now. I think their first banner against their own club on that was, I think, 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And they keep on protesting against many aspects of the commercial activity of their club. But this is certainly one of them. And when it comes to Borussia Dortmund, I don't think that was ever in question. I mean, Borussia Dortmund's fans are known to have this very traditional sense in terms of the football they like to be played, in terms of the issues that matter to them. And one of those issues is certainly not go overboard with the whole idea of what we'd like to call modern football. Not go overboard when it comes to commercialization. And I think they made their voices heard, both sets of fans. In Dortmund's case, I'm sure it's being taken into account. That's just how the club works, and that's how the club showed in the past that it cares about many of the voices that come from the Südtribüne. When it comes to Bayern, I would like to hope so, even though I'm less sure that that's the case. But both sets of fans really made their voices and made their views clear on that matter, definitely.
Yeah, it was just interesting to me because, of course, this is the first game between these two teams since those revelations came out. Of course, they came out last week, so it's not like it happened months ago. But it's, you can listen to the podcast last week where we talked about the impact for the match-going fans and the impact for the Bundesliga as a whole in terms of the Super League. But I just think after those revelations, it was very fitting that both sets of fans, although I think it was one half, one in the other, they both came out against it. And it just highlights that this is not something that is going to appeal to them.
Absolutely not. Match-going fans will never be pro that idea. I can't see a situation in which any set of fans in Germany would be pro Super League. And I mean, people talk about Bayern Munich fans as being like couch fans, as we say, being spoiled. But their active support has been very, very vocal when it comes to supporting causes that matter to them. In politics, in local elections in Bavaria, from activities for refugees, for an instance, when it comes to the memory of the Holocaust, they've been really, really active. And same goes for their own club. And they've been criticizing their own club's dealings with Qatar, for instance. The same logic could be applied also to their view of the idea of a Superliga. They explicitly said last week, if there will be a Superliga, count us out.
Right, yeah.
We're not going to continue support this club. We're just going to boycott the whole competition. And I think that just goes to show that Bayern's core active support is something that many people underrate in that sense, I feel.
So we're a third of the way through the season. Of course, Bayern Munich being in fifth place is the headline. But there's three clubs, including plus Borussia Dortmund, that are above them in the table. And since we're a third of the way through the season, we're going to do something a little bit different. And we're going to go through each of them. And Felix and I are going to try to determine if they're for real or not. So the teams are Borussia Mönchengladbach, Leipzig, and Frankfurt, who actually moved into the top four in the last match day, and it's been a really interesting story. But let's talk about Borussia Mönchengladbach first, because they've been consistently in the top four for a large stretch of the season. They beat Werder Bremen 3-1 over the weekend. Alassane Plea, their record signing, got a hat trick over the weekend, and it's an interesting situation, Felix, because Dieter Hecking still only has a contract until the end of the season. We talked about this earlier, but it's just funny that this team is doing so well, and yet the long-term future of their coaching situation has yet to be determined.
Yeah, it is a funny situation, but I think Max Eberl thinks that Borussia Mönchengladbach sporting director, arguably one of the best sporting directors in the league, he knows what he's doing. I mean, I think if things will continue to go Borussia Mönchengladbach's way in that sense, Hecking's contract will get extended, and they're playing good football. They're playing attacking football. Alessandro Plea is just one aspect of it. I mean, the likes of Hazard and Florian Neuhaus in midfield, just a team that is really, really fun to see, Borussia Mönchengladbach right now. And if that's going to continue that way, I would assume that Hecking's contract is gonna be extended before the winter break. It just wouldn't make sense not to.
Yeah, they came together after last season and talked about the things that they could change in coming into this season. So it seems like there's still a willingness to work together. But what I find really interesting is that this was in Kicker. We quote Kicker a lot, but this was actually a really good nugget from Kicker over on this Monday issue, which was that They've kind of figured out that this 4-4-2 system just didn't really work for them anymore. It's kind of got found out. It had been in place for a while. It had been in place under Andre Schubert. It had been in place under Lucien Favre before that. I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it's been in place for almost 5 or 6 years now. And with the addition of Alassane Plea, there was a key shift away from that kind of system. And you can kind of see it if you compare the team from this season, you compare to the team from last season. You saw Christoph Kramer and Dennis Zakaria playing most of the games for Gladbach last season, and now you only have Tobias Strobel as the real number six in that team, and then much quicker, younger players in Florian Neuhaus and Jonas Hofmann, who has been a revelation, playing in those number eight roles in that 4-4-3, playing in the gaps, in having interplay with Plea and with Stindl and with Hazard. I find that really fascinating, because Dieter Hecking isn't really known for the tactical nuance of the game, and yet he and Max Eberl has kind of found a different way of playing that just sometimes just a different look that a team isn't expecting. Or a team isn't used to seeing from you, having played you in the past, it can make a really big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Borussia Mönchengladbach, you made a comparison to last season. I think they're much more flexible, they're much more fluid. You could see that the players involved this year are quicker, also in terms of their physical aspect. They're just quicker, younger. Florian Neuhaus has been brilliant this season. Has what, 6 assists so far, or something along those lines?
Yeah, something, some stupid number like that. Yeah,
exactly. For such a young player, that only came from the Zweite Bundesliga. I had a really good season last season at Fortuna Düsseldorf, if I'm not mistaken. Really, really did well, but he went up to the first Bundesliga, to Borussia Mönchengladbach, doing really well. Brilliant to see. And generally speaking, I think Gladbach's fluidity, this tactical change you were talking about, is really noticeable for the neutrals that watch their games, because you got the sense in many cases last season you got the sense that they are able to play this sort of football, but that the stability is not there. This season, however, it seems like that's exactly what they've added to their game. I mean, that and Alessandro Plea, as we mentioned.
What a player.
Absolutely. I mean, there were many, many eyebrows were raised when they signed him for, what, 23, 24 million euros. But just for what he did for them so far, 8 goals, 3 assists, if I'm not mistaken.
2 hat tricks already, one in the first round of the cup, although they scored 11 goals, I think, in that game. But and also the one at the weekend. And I was looking up stats before. He has the first hat trick this season away from home too, which is also which is important, because I think Gladbach at times last season had some struggles on the road and wasn't as consistent in the second, especially in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What I found really cool about Plea's goals against Bremen was that his 3 goals had 3 different sort of aspects of his game, that every single one of them was just brilliant in its own way. The first goal was just a pure dribbling, canceling 2 players with 1 move and a brilliant score.
Yeah, okay. Because I talked about this with Jonathan and with a colleague of ours, Mark Hallam, and Mark and I seem to be on this, basically being the same on the same wavelength. That touch was rather fortunate for Plea.
Maybe it was, but
John was just like, Davis, you're ridiculous. In order to come up with that touch, in order to undo 2 defenders with that touch, is just pure brilliance.
It seemed instinctive to me. It seemed like it was absolutely deliberate. But either way, it's just brilliant to watch. The finish was just sublime. You got 2 other goals in which Plea showed how much of a brilliant he is in terms of positioning himself in the right place. The goal in which he got the ball between Pavlenka's and Egelstein's legs at once was just, again, you can argue it's luck, and that one was probably luck. But at the end of the day, those are all different aspects of his game, and every single one of them was something that Gladbach missed last season, and it's brilliant, brilliant to see his development. Let's see if he keeps it up.
So speaking of keep it up, let's now ask, is this real? Are they going to be a top 4 side? Because I saw a comparison of their point totals through the first third of the season and the middle third and the last third over the last 5 years. And they've actually have more points in this first third of the season than they have had over the past 5 years. And the times that it was close to this point total, which is 23 points, they've qualified not just for Europe, but for the Champions League. So do you think that this is real?
I think Mönchengladbach are a very stable football team. They play a football team that they play football that's very steady, that also is sustainable in a way, because they're it's not only that they're brilliant going forward, also their defense seems to be much more confident nowadays. So personally speaking, I think Mönchengladbach are definitely one of the first candidates to go to the Champions League. Also, we have to bear in mind that the league this season is I don't know if I should use the term stronger, but it's definitely more competitive than it was last year and 2 years ago. So given their points tally in this particular league, with this particular competition of 4 or 5 other clubs that are tipped to be in Europe or in the Champions League, I see them as one of the favorites, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned Europe. There, you also have to mention the fact that they aren't in Europe this year, and the teams that are around the same quality as them, they are. And you also have to factor in now that they did get shellacked in the cup, but they all, that means that they're not in the cup anymore. So the only competition they are in the rest of the way is in the Bundesliga, which means that you can count, Gladbach fans know, the club knows exactly how many games they're going to play the rest of the season. So that's that really makes a difference. We've seen that with Leipzig in their first season in the Bundesliga. We saw that last year with Schalke and Leverkusen. But one thing I wanted to highlight about, I was looking up stats for to see if it was real or not. They are the second fewest fouled team in the Bundesliga, but they have the second most set-piece goals. Now, of course, set-piece goals don't necessarily come from fouls. I mean, there's also fouls that occur way far away from the goal, but it shows, it's one of the stats that show how efficient they've been in finishing. And you just have to wonder if that is going to... If that efficiency is something that is sustainable, or if it's going to regress towards the mean.
I mean, it's also a question of how Hecking is going to rotate his squad and whether they're going to strengthen their squad in January. Because currently they do rely a lot on players' goals, on Hazard's runs from the flank. There are certain aspects of their game that are really dependent on very specific characteristics and very specific games. And it's going to be a question of how Hecking is going to make use of that squad of his. but I think generally speaking, things are looking good for them. I think you've mentioned the likes of Neuhaus, players that walked into the team and mixed very, very well. I think it looks good for them. I think generally speaking, the squad is there. You mentioned Zakaria that isn't getting as much game time as last season. He's certainly
Have the depth. Yeah,
exactly. The depth is there, and I would expect Mönchengladbach to keep it up. I would be surprised if they won't be in Europe next season.
All right, so let's move on to the next team, which is on the list, which is Leipzig. So they have the. So they have just 1 point less than Gladbach, but they have only lost one game this season, and that came on the first match day of the season. They're unbeaten their last 10 Bundesliga games, and arguably more importantly, they haven't conceded a goal in their last five. And the last team they played was Bayer Leverkusen, who coming into the game was scoring goals for fun with Karim Bellarabi and with several other players. And what have you made from they have played a lot of games this season, Leipzig have, because they had to go through the Europa League qualifying. What have you made from their progress this season?
I think it was clear that progress has been made throughout the season for Leipzig, because they started the season like they had a cranky start of the season. Their start of the season was not very good, but slowly but surely they made their way and they stabilized. And now they're starting to play the football that everyone expects them to play. This fluid, fast, one-touch football that we all know RB Leipzig for from the last two Bundesliga seasons. The way Sabitzer is adapting to this new role of almost a free role behind the strikers, the way he moves, it was brilliant to see yesterday. And the way he combined with Paulsen, It was just brilliant attacking football, and that's exactly what you expect from Leipzig. What you don't necessarily expect, but we've got anyway, as you said, it's the defensive record. Once they got this one straight, it looks very, very good for them, definitely.
Well, it's interesting because under Ralf Hasenhüttl, you had kind of this 4-4-2 set model, which you didn't necessarily know if it was coming from him or if it was coming from Ralf Rangnick. But he basically, throughout Hasenhüttl's career at Leipzig, he basically played very similar to the same system, 4-4 at the back, sometimes three, but most of the time two in midfield, two on the wing, and two up front. But this season, Ralf Rangnick has just kind of adapted to the situation, which is really interesting, especially considering that he kind of wants to implement this really high pressing, exciting football. And you just look at the last weekend, you see Stefan Ilsanker, Diego Dame, and Kevin Campbell all playing at the same time. that wouldn't, I don't think that would have happened under Hasenhüttl. And if that did, then Elsanga would be playing as a center back. Now, you could argue that he was playing as a center back. Elsanga was playing as a center back yesterday, but he was flanked by the two teenagers, which was Dayot Upamecano and Ibrahima Konate. So, yeah, so it was, so it's just really interesting that it seems like Hasenhüttl has got, he said at the beginning of the season, before the season started actually, that since Leipzig was playing a lot of games, he knew that he was going to have to rotate. He was going to have to rotate his squad. And it actually boggles my mind that a player like Mateusz Kunia, who they acquired in the summer, and basically has played throughout the entire Europa League qualifying campaign, he didn't make his first start until the last match day. That's amazing. I mean, the fact that he is still a consistent part of this team, and he's just been used in different ways, and that's really an accomplishment. Like we said earlier with Lucien Favre, is everybody knowing their role and coming in and playing well, and you see that consistency, you know, and to have that consistency while dealing with the Europa League campaign is rather impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Rangnick has certainly brought his touch to Leipzig. I mean, there were many questions about whether the sort of healthy tension within a squad would remain, given that everybody knows that Rangnick is just there for one season. But at the end of the day, I mean, there was no question about Ralf Rangnick's ability. He brought his very specific, very very high pressing oriented style of football, and that was the case last year. It's just that this year he's actually making the calls in terms of the players that will execute it, and it seems like it's working again. Also in defensive terms, as you said earlier, they haven't conceded like what, 5 games now?
Yeah, 5 straight games. Yeah,
and it's really really it's really encouraging for them, because as a great manager once said, you win games with attack, but you actually win titles with defense. So if they keep it going, who knows? I mean, in the Europa League, they really stand a good chance of qualifying to the next round. They look good in the league. So,
I mean, it's clear. I mean, I think it's clear what the priorities are. You see their performance against Celtic. They knew that they had this big game against at Leverkusen at the weekend, so they didn't put in their best performance on Thursday. They put their best performance on Sunday when they feel at the time that they needed it.
And one of their crucial games in the Europa League is against Salzburg.
Yeah, that, I was going to ask you that, because we are getting to that point now, because we'll probably get to that maybe later, but I mean, that game could decide whether Leipzig goes on or not, or who stays in the Europa League, and it's going to be really interesting. But we'll leave that discussion for another day. What I want to ask now is this real? Do you think that this is something that will keep them in the, not just in Europe, but in the top four?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure their defensive record is said to be as good for the remainder of the season, but that's going to be the key, certainly. Because attack, in terms of their attack, I don't think there's any question that they're one of the most gifted, most qualified teams in the league, without any question. Whether their defense will be able to keep it up at this rate, I'm not entirely sure. And I personally think that out of the teams we're going to talk about, they're the least, they have the least chances of finishing in the Champions League because of their currently ridiculously good defensive record that is just not sustainable. Given the way that Ralf Rangnick plays his football. But either way, they're just playing really good football, and it's fun to watch. And as we said, it's good for the league. I personally feel that because of that aspect of their defense, they're the least likely to finish in the top four.
Okay, well, it's interesting because I don't necessarily always subscribe to the theory of expected goals, and I think some of this the advanced analytics really is situation based. But it's really interesting to see that in terms of expected goals, that they're basically 2.5 goals above. For the season, they're 2.5 goals above their current goal number, which is 9. So their expected goals allowed is 11.72. And, of course, they've seeded 9 goals. But in terms of expected points, it's it's still pretty much the same. So that's why I'm maybe more inclined to put them, to keep them up there. I mean, I think what it will, like I said earlier, what will really determine how well they're going to do in the second half of the season is perhaps going to be how far they advance in the Europa League. Because they do, I mean, Rania's doing a tremendous job rotating the squad, but it's still really not that big. They're still a top-heavy squad. They have kind of, they don't miss Naby Keita maybe as much as some thought that they would, but they still don't have, if someone like Timo Werner or Jean-Kevin Augustin goes down, then that requires, maybe they have an option to replace them, but because they're playing two competitions and also because they advanced past Hoffenheim in the German Cup, they're going to have to play these players a lot, and then that's when either more fitness issues comes in or just tiredness comes into and it factors in.
Yeah, so I think especially given Ragnik's style of football,
right? Exactly. So I think that's really interesting. But it's really interesting to see right now that in terms of expected goals, they're actually not far off what their pace is. So let's get to the last one, because I think that to me personally, of these three teams, the one that appears the most exciting is Eintracht Frankfurt, and just the way that they're playing right now is just so entertaining to watch, because it seems like at any moment they could just pop three or four goals on any team in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, Frankfurt has been probably I think certainly we can agree that they're the most exciting out of these teams in terms of the football they produce so far, in terms of their attacking trio that everyone talks about. Luka Jovic, Sebastian Haller, and Ante Rebic. Scoring goals for fun, playing quick football, fun to watch. Their fans are incredible. The club is doing everything
their
right.
Their fans are really incredible. I mean, we obviously talk about a lot of fans, but I mean, some of the away trips in the Europa League, we kind of expected this considering their trip to, it was Marseille, right? Or is it?
The first one?
The one a couple years ago, the last time they were in Europe. The
Bordeaux.
It was Bordeaux. Yeah. Sorry, not Marseille. But you see it again with just some of these fan choreos in the Europa League. It's so much fun to watch as a neutral.
Absolutely. Their fans have been proving to be absolutely incredible ever since that little trips they have to Europe. I actually met a couple of them at the airport on their way to Marseille, and you can actually see how much of a good time they were having. They were having their traditional Äppler, as they call it in Hessen, which is an apple wine, brilliant drink. A must try for everyone, if you ask me. They were having their drinks at 7 a.m., having fun, joking with police officers even. You can see that their spirits are high, and I think that's at least in part inspired by the football their team is currently playing. I mean, Adi Hütter has managed to sort of develop the ideas upon which Niko Kovac has built that team, and he made them an attacking side, a dominant side, a side that knows coming into games we're gonna score goals, and it's brilliant to see a side so confident. I mean, that confidence also came across in a few of Dani Da Costa's recent interviews. It was so brilliant to see him so happy. Basically, what happened was after the game in Nicosia, it wasn't Nicosia, right?
Yeah.
After that game, Dani Da Costa gave a post-match interview, and he basically told reporters, listen, I'm going to do the job for you. Do we think it was a good game? Yeah, it was a good game. We really felt we were controlling it. Do we look forward to having a break after a run of many games? Yes, we do. A break would do well to everyone. We got to get some rest. How is it going to be against Schalke on Saturday? It's going to be a difficult game. And basically ended the interview doing the job of the reporters. He did the same after the Schalke game. It was all in good spirits. And that just epitomizes how confident Eintracht Frankfurt are at the moment, I think.
It's really, Adi Hütter is a really interesting character because I saw his press conference when Ante Rebic signed his contract extension, and just how even keeled he seemed in the press conference. I know that a lot of managers seem even keeled, especially, a lot of them are well trained. But there was also a piece in the Hessenschau, which is the Tagesschau in the state of Hessen, he gives praise to players privately, which I think is so interesting. He doesn't. It's not like he kind of keeps everything in much more localized to each player rather than focusing on the whole team. That's just so interesting to me, and you can see the impact that he has. I mean, the one thing that I really like that he's doing is that he's just putting his best players on the field. It seemed at times under Niko Kovac that playing Rebic and Haller and Jovic at the same time would kind of wasn't possible because they were all the similar players. But Adi Hütter seems to have set up his team to kind of make sure that his best players are on the field. I mean, you see Filip Kostić playing in a wingback position. I mean, and he does that because he knows how much Filip Kostić had to play last season defensively because he was at Hamburg because Douglas Santos was behind him. Yeah. You know, so he it's just putting his best players in positions and giving them responsibilities. And then you see Filip Kostić just breaking down the right. You see Ante Rebic going at Schalke defenders over the weekend. And Luka Jovic just being free to show his brilliance. And then Sebastian Haller putting him in positions to do what he does best, which is just poach goals, whichever body part is closest to the ball. For a coach that is in his first season, the fact that he's in a way kind of simplified things to the point where he's simplified it to the point where his players can feel free to do what they do but also putting him in the right position to succeed. That is an incredible balance to have for a first year coach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people love to talk about Frankfurt's attack. I mean, you look at their defense as well. Their defense is so balanced. I mean, David Abraham playing so well this season. Dani Da Costa that we've mentioned earlier. Gacinovic in midfield. They have just a brilliant balance in their team. And Adi Hütter got that balance right so far. I mean, in a few more words about their brilliant attack. There were parts of the season. I mean, I remember that game after Luka Jovic scored 5.
Right. Against Düsseldorf, yeah.
Exactly. The game afterwards, he was left on the bench and it was all good. Because Adi Hütter knows when to use his players and which one of them fits to which game. And it shows. At the end of the day, they bring the result, the result that their coach wants, and they bring it in terms of the manner, in terms of the way they play their football. They look so confident. I mean, they just ooze confidence. Well, that's brilliant.
You bring up that 5-goal performance from Jovic. One of the reasons why that happened was one of the interesting things about that game was that Ante Rebic was actually on the bench. Adi Hütter was saving Ante Rebic for the Europa League, and he still got 7. He still got 5 goals from what one could consider a backup option in forward at the time. And that is Düsseldorf. A lot of teams recently have put a lot of goals past their defense, but still, I mean, you still have to do it. You still have to score 7 goals. I mean, Dortmund still has to score 7 goals against Nuremberg. Leipzig still has to score 6 goals against Nuremberg.
Yeah.
Just because it's these teams may not be of the quality. I mean, Bayern Munich has not put 7 goals past anybody this season, and it doesn't seem like they have come even close to looking like a team that could do that. So it's it is really interesting the balance that he has in attack, but we're approaching the hour mark here. So do you think these developments are for real for Frankfurt?
Absolutely. I think given the way they're set up tactically, their footballing ideas, the way Adi Hütter manages his squad, I really do feel they're for real, and especially given the fact they have experienced players involved in that very young, exciting team. Kevin Trapp in goal, lest we forget. And yeah, I personally feel they were unbeaten in 9 in the Bundesliga now. They've been doing a brilliant job, or unbeaten in 9 generally, I'm not entirely sure, but they're confident, they look good, they play exciting attacking football that also flatters the Bundesliga's brand, if you ask me. And I hope and believe it will continue.
All right, so now we've talked about these 3 teams. Which team is most likely to finish above Bayern Munich this season, do you think?
out of these three?
Out of these three. Because they're both, all three, of course, are ahead of them now.
Wow. Interesting question. Very interesting question. Put it this way. My heart says Frankfurt, but the head says Gladbach.
Okay. I still think Leipzig has the quality that and has the resources to go out to strengthen their team.
It's a difficult one. It's certainly a difficult one.
Yeah, I picked Leipzig. I mean, I'm a little biased in the sense that I picked Leipzig at the beginning of the season to finish in the top four. Of course, that assumption was that prediction came shortly before me predicting Frankfurt would finish in the 16th in the playoff spot, and when that doesn't look very good right now. But it's I just think that Leipzig just has the resources. If they don't have the strength in their side, they have the resources to get the strength in the side that they think that they need. And they of those three teams, I think they're considering Julian Nagelsmann is expected to come after the season. That they kind of have to finish in the Champions League. So I would say that they are probably most likely. All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribune Weekly. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribune Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribune Podcast. And if you have any thoughts on the Clásico or on the teams between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund at the moment, just contact us on social media. Felix Tomzut is at FTomzut, and I'm at Davis_VanUptorp. The international break is coming up, so we should have another Bundesliga Spotlight segment for you next week. But until then, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.